Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of A Gem of a Secret podcast. We are in a heat dome. It's so hot. I'm wearing nothing. That's what's happening today. Good heavens, it is hot outside. At the time of recording this podcast, it is 100 degrees outside. Oh, gosh, it just makes me thinking about all the drag queens who do the burning up nicks. And, you know, who are just popping and twirling and stuff like that when they're, like, having this heat like this. I remember I've done drag in 100-degree weather. And, like, I'm a bigger girl. And so I can't necessarily get away with, like, not wearing a lot of body. Because, you know, people have judgments. And I actually really appreciate people who have the body, body con that I just don't possess. Because I'll still be out there in, like, a waist cincher and boobs and a... Oh, goodness. It reminds me of when we did the Expressions event that I was attached on to last minute to do sound work for. And I was wearing an outfit by No Offense, which it was like this little mullet dress. And it's tight fitting, like very, very tight fitting. And then I just had like a petticoat on underneath it to pop it out, have my boobs on and a nice wig. And that was pretty much what I did for that like 90 something degree weather where we raised all of that money. And congrats to those community leaders who participated in that. I'm going to say a few of them. I'm not sure who all was a part of it, but I know it was like Demand Drag, Bruce Ross, Viola Shade, Dahlia Bell, raising money for trans folks, and that was really, really cool. Today's a long episode, so I'm going to get right into our interview, but as always, there are content warning and trigger warnings that will come in the next portion of the podcast. But remember, everybody, kindness is free, and if we keep operating that way, eventually it'll just be the primary currency of the world. And with that, how are you doing, listeners? Let me know in the comments.
Tune in, fabulous listeners. We've got a sizzling announcement for all you drag aficionados and karaoke connoisseurs. Join us every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. for an unforgettable night of glamour and entertainment at Misfits Bar and Lounge, located at 2530 Northeast 82nd Avenue in Portland. Hosted by the mesmerizing Autumn Rains and captivating Coco Gem Holiday, this drag queen karaoke show will have you singing, dancing, and living your best life. Let loose and showcase your vocal prowess alongside these extraordinary queens as they create an atmosphere bursting with energy, laughter, and pure fabulousness. Mark your calendars and gather your squad for a Wednesday night that promises to be nothing short of spectacular. Whether you're a seasoned performer or a first-time diva, Misfits Bar and Lounge is a place to be for an unforgettable evening of entertainment, empowerment, and endless fun. Don't miss out on the fabulous extravaganza. Join us this Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. and let your inner star shine at Misfits Bar and Lounge, Portland's newest queer plus space.
It's a podcast.
Check it out.
Tune into what they tell you podcast.
Check it out.
And we are back, listeners, and we are going to be talking about some difficult subjects in this section of the podcast. So content warning about mental health and anything related to that that could maybe spurn from this conversation. But I got reached out to by a good friend of mine who said that they wanted to talk about these subjects on the podcast. And so welcome back to my podcast is Craven Horrors, everybody. Say hi, Craven.
Hello. I'm sitting there literally. I was already preparing for you to do the first half. And so I was just like, wow, we're skipping? Like, I'm just like, wow, I wanted to hear what you were going to say before this.
I know. It's funny. I always come up with it on the fly. I have no idea what I'm going to say. Like, something could literally happen where my mailman, like, trips on my porch, right? In between this filming, and then that's what'll be my intro. Be like, oh my gosh, y'all, my mailman just tripped on my porch or some stupid stuff like that. That's how it works.
That's fair.
So let's start. Let's make it easy. Why did you reach out to me today to talk about these issues?
I had been seeing a lot of some your posts, but I also have been feeling a lot of similar things to that. Like I've had a couple recent experiences this week where I had to drop out of gigs, and it kind of took me back to when my mental health was a lot poorer and how I think there was a couple years where I was a very unreliable performer where I would just drop a lot because like my mental health was so like out of whack and I would just get really like worked up about certain things regardless of what it was just frustrating, but I was trying to compare that to this week of validating myself on, you know, why it's okay to drop out of a gig, even though, like, you know, it's not the best thing to do, but sometimes it's the best thing for you.
Right. And I hear that. I hear that a lot because I have always prided myself on the fact that I don't pull out of gigs. But I can tell you at the same time, it's not always been the best thing in the world to do. It really isn't. Like, I have been put in situations with performers. And let me preface this too. I've been put in situations with people that have... Oh, I actually have a great example of this that I can share. I remember when me and... So my ex-husband had kind of like stopped doing drag a little bit, but not really. Like, they just weren't really involved in the scene. And I sat on the pride board of my city. And I'll never forget this moment because it was one of those things of where I wasn't even given a heads up. So what happened was I was like hosting this side of the show and they were going to have a special guest that came in later. And I remember I was on stage with everybody while they were trying to work out a lot of this stuff and whatever. And I was like, yeah, and I was just like hosting. And then I saw the event pride president or like the head of the events coordinator or whatever, like motioning me over. And I was like, I can't hear you. I can't hear you. Cause I was on stage at our big pride festival with all of these entertainers on stage. And somebody had said, well, there's a performer back there. And it turned out to be my ex-husband. And it's like the first time I'd seen them in months at this point, right? And they were the surprise performer, you know, coming back to doing drag and whatever, whatever. And so I had to introduce them. And I remember feeling so upset that nobody had told me this was happening, knowing that I was going to be on stage. Like, everybody knew I was going to be on stage. And I wasn't even just given a heads up. And I remember it like removed all the power from me, like, because I don't know if I would have dropped out of doing the gig. But when I was not given the opportunity to decide if I wanted to be a part of the gig, that's what really hurt, I think.
Yeah, that's really frustrating because it kind of puts you in like a position where you have to question the ethics of the people putting together the show. Which sucks because a lot of the time, at least in smaller towns like Portland, like you, oh Lord, my brain, I literally forgot what I was about to fucking say. hold up. It makes you question like the producers, which a lot of the times they end up being people you've known for a long time. So it ends up being this whole personal thing and you have to like, be like, are they trying to go about this professionally or do they not care about me? Like, what's the deal? Like, because I had something really similar happen last week. I felt really bad. I had to drop out of a show that I was really excited about, but a person that I had very public online beef with that had happened over the course of probably 3 years, like, they were booked in the show with me and I didn't know until the day of when I got the set list and I was like, oh my God. And then I was like, you know, obviously I was freaking out for a little bit, but then I had to take a step back and be like, all right, well, if I knew they were in the show, would I have dropped it? And the answer was yes. What sucked is the producer was someone that I've known for a really long time. So I'm not really sure how that kind of happened, because like me and that performer both dropped the show very, very reasonably, like both sides, like, you know, it just would not have been good.
I mean, I made a comment once about that, actually, specifically before you continue. I made a comment about that once that it's not necessarily the producer's job to understand the inner workings of people, but that's why I think show chats are important. I know a lot of producers these days don't necessarily let everybody know who's in the show right away, right? Until a poster comes out or a set list is made. And that can be, and I think that a producer should really make sure that people understand who's going to be in the show. Now, I do have an opinion about like whether or not when the offer goes out about who's going to be in the show, because they might not even be booked yet. But I do think that's why show chats are important. But I'll let you continue.
I always feel really weird when there isn't a show chat. It's probably because I've, you know, have a couple different boundaries with people in the community. But, you know, it just kind of helps protect your peace, because there's like, I was getting myself pumped for the event, and so I was like, okay, getting myself excited, like kind of thinking about how I was going to go about it. And then as soon as I saw that person in the chat in the set list, like all of it went away and it just went to straight anxiety of like, well, how am I going to have to deal with this? Like, how am I going to go about it? Like, is it going to be a thing? Like, and it really sucked the fun out of drag. Which I always think that drag should be fun. Like, I know people need to do it for, you know, financial reasons, and I'm sure there's a couple other reasons, but I think fun should be at least part of it for everybody, because if you're on stage and you're just not having a good time, the audience is going to feel that.
Yeah, I've been using drag as an escape recently from some things that are going on in my personal life, and I made a post, well, actually, at the time of filming this, I made a post this morning that I wish that I could sit down across from my out-of-drag persona and have a conversation with myself, or, like, just wear both sides of my personality, because I've developed, like, Coco, so I've been doing drag for over 11 years, and I've developed her so much that I feel like she's her own person, even though we're the same person. Mm-hmm. And, like, I feel like we both have experiences that the other person could really, like, benefit from, and yes, it is one person, but I'd love if I could separate myself to have some of the conversations I feel like I would benefit from with having with myself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, just I'd been thinking about that, because when I was performing as her, as I'm going through some of these things in my head over the last week, like, I was having a great, fun, and wonderful time as Coco, like, because she's not dealing with some of the stuff that I'm dealing with in my personal life. And and the thing is, and it happened, like, immediately, as soon as the drag came off, like, it's just like all the things that, you know, I'm dealing with just like came flooding back into my brain. And so, you know, that's the thing though, like, some people can separate it. But there are things, but that's when it comes to things that Coco has dealt with, to where it makes it hard for me to perform. If there's like certain people in the show, or an audience member who's done X, or a venue that's done Y, or just, like, whatever, like, I love to try to be professional as possible and just get the show done. But then also, I feel like the audience can also see that too, where they're like, oh, they're just showing up to work and they're going home. And that's not a great experience for our community. That's not fun. Right.
Yeah. There's a couple venues where I feel like a lot of the shows are really just kind of people showing up to work and, you know, that's it. It's so interesting. Drag can be such a powerful, like, healing thing for us queer people, but it can also be so damaging. And it's like, I feel like it is usually dependent on how the community goes about things. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, it is. The community, well, I mean, based on my recent notoriety with my last podcast episode, I have recognized that the community isn't a singular voice, right? Everybody has their own opinions, and even if some would agree, everybody has their own opinions about the things that's happening around them. But the only thing that we can really control is how we feel about a situation, and how we will process it, and how we will hold ourselves accountable, even if somebody else is holding us accountable.
Yeah.
And the one thing that really bothers me is that accountability to my own actions will look different from somebody else's accountability for their actions, right? Mm-hmm. There's not a rule book about what accountability, responsibility, communication looks like. There just isn't. And I feel like with community in general, like, we all have these ideas, but we all have to remember it's not... Community is a concept. It's not like a governmental body. Even though at times in the queer community, it feels like it is.
Well, you know, the Rose Court.
They are a community within our community, yes.
Oh, well, I just felt like they're like a government body, like, in their own, like, respects, like, sort of.
Yeah, sort of. It's funny, I was... I don't really necessarily keep up on what the ISRC is doing, but I had seen how Barbie Valentine this last week of the time of filling this, like, is not doing her step down, and you know, and she made a really professional, really public really liked post about that. And this is actually going to go into our main topic that we're doing too, that, you know, they were done. They had an experience that they didn't necessarily care for and they were done. And so they decided not to participate. And I think that that makes sense for them. Because the reality of this episode, which it's super hard to talk about, is mental health and what that means for us as drag artists and how we overcome those things. And Craven has been through a whirlwind. So, yeah, I get it.
Oh, God.
Actually, let me ask you a couple questions about that, actually.
Yeah, go for it.
How did you... So you removed yourself from the scene a couple of years ago. Let's start there. How did you work your way back in?
I'm trying to think of, what year was this?
This would probably be like around 2020.
Okay. I think drag can, like, at least being a drag performer, it can be really overwhelming just because there's like so many talented people, so many big voices, and a lot of clashing personalities. So I think I was getting really overwhelmed with just some of that. I think one of them was one part I needed to take a lot of break from was I got called out for a photo series I was doing. My intentions were like, you know, I had good intentions, but since it was surrounding around the BLM movement, it came across very white savioristic, and I didn't notice that, but I was delivered that information in a very, trying to think a good word, a very strong way, and so that it hit me in a way where I was just like, oh my God, fuck, that was not what I wanted to do. And so that on top of probably a couple other things, I know I was going through it. I just kind of needed to step out, needed to kind of reassess things, kind of take a look at myself and see what I wanted to do. And getting back into the community, I just started reaching out to producers that I had had good experiences with. So like you, Wolfgang, Aurora, like people I know, and, you know, just put my, my name in their ear. I noticed a really great way to get back into a show is if you present your, performance concept. Like if you have a very specific vision, and especially with like Wolfgang and Drag Danger Zone, so like with Marla, Aurora, and I think I said Wolfgang, it's really well received because it kind of shows you're like, this is what I could bring to your show, this is what I'm thinking, and they're just like, oh my gosh, that would fit perfect for this, or vice versa, versus someone that just wants like a general gig, like, oh, let me know if there's any like shows I can perform in, and like they don't really have an idea of what you're going to do or not. Unless you're like one of those performers that have a very specific shtick. Like if you're like a singer, like Saint Syndrome, they usually only do their performance live vocals and the piano. Or if you're like an impersonator, there's a couple in our community, and I don't want to mess up their names because I forgot what their name was in drag. But you know, if you're like an impersonator, people, you know, expect you to do like something that you do that. Oh, Autumn is a great example. Autumn usually does Lady Gaga or something in that realm. She also does really good rapping with like letting the N-word out because she's a ally.
White as hell.
Very white, wants to do the song still. But I just feel like, you know, if you tell a producer what you would do, I feel like that kind of like gives you a little edge up, but also like being transparent with the mental health stuff, like it's hard to do that, at least for me, because I always feel like I'm being so whiny and I invalidate my feelings because I'm just like, no, like, you know, I'm just making excuses, blah blah blah. When in reality, it's like very valid to drop out for your mental health, because I think in one of my messages to the show I dropped out of, I was just like, I know I can't bring the performance level that you're booking me for because of this. And I don't think it'd be fair to the producer for me to just show up and half-ass a gig and get a full, like, booking. Like, I would feel like I was stealing. So I personally would have rather not been in it than not bring what I should be.
Well, I have a question about something you just said.
Yeah.
You said, I tend to feel like I'm whining or being annoying, like when it comes to like talking about my mental health. And I think I want to stop there for a second. And I think that that's really interesting, because it's not even because it's specifically just because of the taboos, right, around mental health. I think there's also this thing of mental health usually isn't just like solved in like a day or a couple of days or whatever, right? It takes, it's a process, and it often flares its head. Like, it also rears its head over and over, and it flares again. And so people do hear the same reasons, not excuses, reasons that you might want to drop out or not participate or not be able to do X, right?
Yeah.
And there's another side of this coin. For me, I talk about it, and then I don't do anything to, like, I don't participate in self-care. I actively just don't. Because this is the thing about Black people in general, like self-care has always just been a luxury for Black people when they have things going on. And so I try really hard to recognize that I need to take a beat, but I'll say like, yeah, I'm having a really bad mental health day, but then I don't do anything differently in my entire day. Like, I'll still do the show. I'll get the set list together and da, 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 da. This last week's been a little, really bad. What's been falling off is like communications with entertainers that I need to have for booking shows. Mm-hmm. Like I sent out all my messages yesterday and then like closed off the internet. And I was like, well, this is probably a good idea, because they're going to be like, yeah, I'd love to do the show. And then they hear nothing from me.
my hours are 9 to 5.
My question is, how do you fight the inner saboteur?
Oof. You just gotta, I don't know, you kind of have to just be like, there aren't like any like set way to help your mental health. There's not really anything that fits everyone, but if you're doing something towards it, or at least like attempting, and okay, I feel like I'm answering incorrectly. Can you repeat your question?
No, you're fine. You're answering it well. I said, what do you do to challenge or fight or hush your inner saboteur?
You just gotta, it's so frustrating, because you're going to be your meanest critic, and you're going to say things that are going to break your heart every day, because you know exactly what's going to hurt you. So you have to recognize that sometimes it's a knee-jerk reaction. Maybe you didn't get praised as a child or as a student. Maybe you're not used to being able to take compliments. I still have a really hard time taking compliments, but I've gotten to the point where I say thank you. And just kind of have to fight it, because I feel like the inner saboteur is almost a conglomeration of every abuser you've had, every negative experience you've had, every time you felt insecure. And this is a person that you initially believe, and it's frustrating because it hurts, and kind of have to recognize that it's kind of more, I don't know, I feel like it's almost like an echo of a memory that's kind of like ringing in your ear all the time. And you have to just be like, no, it's not like this now. It's not easy.
Right. No, it's not. And I admitted to Craven, which is not something I love to admit, but a new thing in my life is I've been having panic attacks. I finally figured out what they were yesterday. I'm going to get some help for them, but it stems from mine come from stemming from potential negative outcomes of things and decisions that I make in life. Like, if I make this decision, this thing might happen. If I make this decision, this thing might happen. Or if I hear this thing, this might happen. Or just a lot of things like where it's like a lot of people with abandonment issues kind of go through this. And I remember it was two nights ago. I woke up in the middle of the night wanting to puke and wanting to die all in the same moment. And I was like, this is like the physical reaction of a panic attack. I was like, good. Cause I had a friend. I was not a friend. I guess a guy I was kind of dating like maybe like 13 years ago or something like that. I remember he said that he was texting me about it. He's like, yeah, I had to leave work early today. I had a panic attack. And I remember in my brain, I never said it to him. In my brain, I was like, what the hell? I was like, I can't just like leave work. I need this money. Like, I need to da 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 da. Like, how could you just leave? And I actually remember I was like, well, what does that feel like? He's like, think about it as every single thing is like closing in around you. And no matter what you do, you feel like you can't get out. And I was like, I was like, I wonder what that feeling is like. And for the first time ever, like two nights ago when that happened, and I have been having little ones, but like it was a big one, and it did feel like nothing you could do. It made you feel like you had to escape it in like every aspect of the word. And it was terrifying too, because my heart was beating super fast. I'm sweating. My body feels like it needs to puke. I feel like I want to die, and it feels like nothing will make it feel better, no matter what you did. And I was just like, and I can't even imagine having one of those, like right before I go on stage, or being in a dressing room situation that makes me uncomfortable, or dealing with somebody in the community I don't want to necessarily deal with, to where I'm leaving in the middle of a gig because I'm having an aggressive, horrendous, life-shattering panic attack.
This actually reminds me of a time I actually did a performance while in the midst of a panic attack. It fucking sucked. Because I've been performing for a while, and so, like, you know, after you're performing for a while, you don't really get the same, like, butterflies or nervousness. You kind of, the song goes on, you do your thing, you kind of black out a little bit, but you know, for the most part that, like, you know, you did what you needed to do. If you didn't, you can tell usually by the tips, unless, like, the audience was kind of stingy, but, I was at the Star, and I had accepted a gig after my breakup with my ex last year. And I was going through so much shit at that time. I was overextending myself. I was doing Rocky practices. I was co-living with my ex-boyfriend. And my drag mother, Stephanie, had also died. And so in this time period, I really shouldn't have been accepting gigs like that at all, but I needed the money, so I forced myself, and I was really unprepared. I didn't know all the lyrics to the song, and when I got on stage, I felt like running off it the entire time, and it was not a good feeling. I didn't feel like I did my best. I felt like I let down the producers, let down everyone around me, and regardless of if any of this is true, because I think for the most part, everyone understood really well why things went the way they did, but I don't know, it makes it really important to kind of evaluate like your mental health before you take on more things than you can take within reason. If you're like financially struggling, I understand people pushing themselves to do gigs, and regardless if they are ready for it or not, but if you can, like, it's better not to do it than add that extra weight.
It's true. I agree. I have gig because Autumn is out of town at the time of filming this, and so I'm doing pretty much all of our gigs that we have together, which is good because it's a good distraction about how I'm feeling about certain things. But at the same time, also doing some of these gigs is just like, feels overwhelming, really, really, really overwhelming in a way that's like like it feels insurmountable a little bit. I did do an activity where I got my, because you know, you try to take your mind off of things when you're going through life stuff, and I started cleaning my drag room. So at least my drag room is like cleaner than normal. So when I get back to doing, you know, gigs, like at least I'm not like shuffling around with all this crap that's everywhere and I don't know where anything goes. And that'll be super helpful at the end of the day. And I've also recognized that, and this is a good question for you. What are some of the tools that you've now developed? Because I know you've been, you know, you've really been working on yourself over the last couple of years. What are some of the tools that you've developed to be able to push forward when you're having down days?
I'm really big on alone time and like positive alone time. I really like to read manga. That's a really nice escape for me. Taking a bubble bath, like binge watching an anime, like just kind of like I've been doing things that kind of like heal my inner child, which is a lot of, like I have a fair amount of trauma that I'm still that I am currently working on. With my therapy, I've learned a lot of cool things, like when I had Dr. Carl, I forgot his last name, but he's Dr. Carl. He was a nerdy therapist I had, and I forgot what the abbreviation for it was, but it kind of stimulated your these certain glands in your face and forehead, and it was around the time when the new election was happening, and I was really anxious because of, you know, I didn't want to have Trump another 4 years, so I was freaking out, and I was being like, I was at the grocery store trying to get a money order, and I just got called faggot, like just unprovoked, and this guy dipped, and it got me freaking out because I didn't feel safe. So when I got home, I was like, you know, having a panic attack. And so I used the skill that I learned, which is you get a bowl of cold water, put ice cubes on the top, and then you stick your face in there for 10, 30 seconds. I don't know. And then you go out, you breathe, and you do it again. And it stimulates this chemical reaction that causes this overwhelming like relief, like it almost gives you like your body like a breath of fresh air if you're like having that panic attack, which makes you like really tense up. So it really kind of helps you, like it activates this chemical that goes for like 15 minutes, and it kind of helps you get through the like the worst of it. So that was one of the skills I learned. I just learned a new one, actually, in my therapy session today, because I was telling my therapist, Allison, about how I've been kind of not feeling like a real person anymore, just kind of feeling like I'm stuck in the motions and just kind of watching everything happen. And she's like, all right, well, sounds like you're disassociating. And so she was like, what kind of skills are you doing to help with that? And I'm working on projects, so I'm painting stuff to kind of help distract, because I have a lot of fun personal stuff that's going on in my background as well, that I'm processing, and it doesn't take weeks, it doesn't take months, it's going to take years, and that's okay. I can just get a little better every day at it. Talking about it for me helps me. Yeah, please interrupt. I will keep on talking.
I did this thing that's going to sound crazy. I was so sad. So I saw this meme online that I thought was super funny. Like, it just was some guy posted about how, sometimes like depression is just annoying. Like, oh God, do I have to have my depression spelled today? I have things to do. And, because yesterday I had a really, really bad day, and I felt like I mentally, physically pushed it down. I mean, pushed it down into oblivion. I told my body, I said, I am done being sad about this today. I have things to do. I no. I told him, I was like, ma'am, no. And my body's live. Like, oh, that's not how.
Yeah. She doesn't even go.
Yeah, my body found back there like, oh no, girl.
She's just like, you want me off this couch?
Yeah, like, I said, you will get out of my house.
Have you ever tried to make Stephanie leave the house against her will? Have you? It doesn't happen.
No.
She'd be so mad at me for comparing her to depression.
Yeah, she'd love it.
Depression's like the she'd Stephanie on your couch. She'll leave when she wants.
Oh my God. And I, you know, and I feel like I shoved it down to the point of where it was, if I could describe what the feeling was for any of my friends who live with this, because this is kind of, I don't know, I feel like a superhero for doing it. I feel like I shoved it down and then it kept trying to get out. And so then I put it in a cage and then I threw it into the ocean. And I was like, you're going to get out eventually, but you need to stay there because I have things to do.
And saved by the genie. Like, oh, you dropped this. And you're just like, Robin Williams, no, no, go away. Fuck that off.
And it's true. And I was so interested at the fact that I always had a lot of mental fortitude, and like I didn't realize how aggressively strong it was to where I could tell depression to be like, I need 10 minutes. And I it's like, oh, okay, well, I'm just going to stand over here.
You were being strong, not aggressive. You strongly insisted on it going down. That would be the PC place for today.
Yes, well, that's fine. I am sick and tired of it being me. So a couple of other questions that I have for you on this topic then is that let's talk about therapy for a second. Have you found there's a lot of people in the drag community who are nervous about therapy because they're like, you know, they're nervous about their therapist or finding a good therapist. What have you found to be some of your positives and negatives about therapy?
So I used to fucking hate therapy. Like I had to do therapy since I was probably in third grade. Like started there with anger issues and we just went from there. As a youth, I didn't like a single therapist I had. I was always incredibly annoyed and drained from it. It made my depression worse because I didn't like, you know, the people I was talking to. I had a guy named Dr. Clark, but he just always made me uncomfortable. And at the time I was incredibly uncomfortable around men. So I was like, eh. And then I had this lady named Jennifer and I think I was a little too old for her because I just felt like we didn't do anything. It was like around when I came out. She's like, how do you feel about being gay? I'm just like, I don't know. It's new, I guess. Like, it was just weird. So I fucking hated them all. And then my prescriber was super annoying because she was just like, ADHD people need to not smoke weed. It's like candy. It's bad for you. And I'm just like, this is really biased. You're probably a Republican just pretending you're cool. I don't know. But so then after that, I like swore off therapy, and it wasn't until I was constantly wanting to unalive myself that I decided to get into therapy so I wouldn't want to do that as much. I was just like, yeah, normal people probably aren't thinking about jumping off of the second story in the middle of Rose Coronation. Because, like, I was there. I was at the top floor, and I was just like, the only thing that kept me from jumping down was the fact that I didn't want all these gay people to be fucking judging my dead body. Because they'd be like, oh, girl, she wore that? Like, and it's,
wow, that's toxic.
I'm just glad that I was insecure about that, because I probably would have tried something. I was not in a great place. So I had my first good therapist when I finally got into it. Also, a great tip, if you need to get psych-evaled, coordinate a panic attack or a mental breakdown at the same time. They'll get you in real quick.
Coordinate. coordinate these things together, and then you can buy one, get one free.
How often have you thought to unalive yourself? And I was just like, pretty often. Yeah. Did you think about that today? I'm thinking about it right now. that aside, like, I mean, when you've had suicidal ideation, I think joking about it is like the best way to cope with it, because, you know, a lot of the time you will be wanting to do that over something very like minorly inconvenient, like your favorite soda was out of stock and now the only thing to do is drive off the I-5 bridge. Like, it's very, the logic doesn't make sense. So having a therapist, super, super helpful. I really recommend everyone to do it, because like I talk about drag drama to my therapist all the time, so I can get an actual neutral opinion, because it's really hard to find that. And I've been able to bounce off a lot of things on her, and she's also been able to give me a lot of information that I didn't have.
But, yeah, I think that is really great, because that specific subject is why I wanted to seek out a therapist versus, like, because I have a lot of people in my life that I love and care about. Like, Craven is a person I care about, and I have a couple of friends that, you know, would be super open and listen to my problems. But the thing is, like, I know that they got to a point where, so I have compassion fatigue as well.
I mean, it's been
there's spent, so many people in my life who came to me for stuff. Yes. Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's gone. It's like literally gone. Like every time I have a friend who comes to me with something that they need a lot of compassion, is I'm done. Yeah. So I'm going to talk to somebody who's unbiased and can talk to me about, you know, my issues and call me out on my own bullshit, which is nice. And I'm going to tell you something, and the sad thing is, I bet the person who this happened with is going to feel a way about it, but I'm not going to say their name, but they're going to know it's about them, and it's something that's not necessarily super negative, but it caused so much harm to me emotionally.
Yeah.
That it's part of the reason that led me down this trip. I had a falling out with a friend, and when we were having the conversation, because I get really vulnerable to my friends, very, very vulnerable to the people I consider close to me.
I also do, because I have no boundaries with self-preservation, or that's not the right word, but you know, like, I will tell you all, I mean, yes, but also no. I'll tell you everything about me without, like, thought of how this could harm me, which I feel like you get very similar. You get really similar to, I feel like, because we've had like our heart to hearts where we're just like open up our chest, our ribs are all exposed, and then we're asking for all the ranch at Hub. It's great. but it's not good for everyone, because not everyone has great intentions.
No. And the funny thing is, I never thought that this would happen with this person in this way. And this is going to sound so immature, but it's true. They yelled at me. They raised their voice at me. They diminished me a little bit. And I sat there and I listened to it. And it was so hurtful at the fact that they were being so mean in their anger towards me that it broke. I wouldn't say me. It broke our connection. Like, it just did. I had nothing left to offer this person. It's literally like we had like several straps hanging on in our friendship, and they just cut them all, and it hurts so bad. And I literally called my drag daughter Sequin McQueen. I called her after the conversation, and I was just crying because it hurt so much. Oh, and then I called Autumn Rains as well, my roommate, best friend. About, oh god, she just like, she's saying, "Oh, honey,
oh, are you crying? Why are you crying? You should come here and drink with me." No, that's stupid.
Yeah, everything that she did. Like,
you just be fine on the other side of the phone. And you're just like, ah.
it was, yeah, I ugly cried, and I haven't cried from a friend hurting me, like outside of like someone passing away. Like I haven't cried from a friend hurting me in so many years, because I do. I let down all of my walls. And the thing is, I'm not a person who believes in... I've grown from friendships a lot over the years. I probably used to be, but I don't believe in being hurtful towards the end of a friendship, like saying things about people, because it just can get really mean and really awful. Like saying, like, you are this person and this, you cannot change my mind about who you are. And I'm like, well, I can't really defend that because you said I can't change
what you think of me.
So
I think I felt in a similar experience with my ex, not in the same way, but it was more like they said the magic word that would just kind of like end the conversation. Like, I don't know. It was like almost like their checkmate sentence for like the relationship or for the friendship. So they would just say, God has a different plan for me. I'm not supposed to be with guys, blah, blah, blah. For me, I have a lot of religious trauma, so, and they know that, so they did that on purpose to make the relationship, like, done. And it's kind of shitty that, you know, when people do that, they've already decided without, like, you know, talking with you. They either already decided, or they had something against you and were just tolerating you till something came up like that. Which I've had both of that happen.
Yeah. It's hard when it does.
Yeah. It's so hard too, especially with the queer drama, that like you can try to talk with people who aren't in the community about it, but they don't fully understand, because it's like a lot of people in our community are very hurt people, and it's hard not to project that hurt onto each other, which is why our community is having so many issues.
Yeah, I know that people are gonna, and I'll say it now because I think this is a good point to say that. I know people are thinking that this podcast is going to be related to my last podcast and the online drama that happened as a result of it. The thing is, and I know people are probably triggered even by the word drama, and the thing is, I'm choosing to not engage with it. I don't have the mental capacity or spoons to deal with it right now. And as much as that could or could not be a cop-out, it's just also true. The thing is, I don't think I would do anything differently, even if I had the spoons to deal with it. Mm-hmm. I don't engage with people on the internet who are unwilling to have civil conversations about negative incidents. I'm unwilling to engage with people who are committed to misunderstanding me, and I'm unwilling to engage with people who just want to see harm come to me. And even if that's not their intention, that is a result. And so I'm okay not engaging. So for people who came to the podcast, listen to see what I was going to say about it. That's what I have to say about it.
Also for the podcast, I have no idea what this said drama is. So this conversation is purely about the bigger picture. Because I didn't listen to the last podcast, and I've been actively ignoring online drama because I have to deal with a lot of stuff with my own mental health, and I'm trying to be better towards it, so I'm not engaging as of now. If Coco were to message me and be like, hey, I really need to talk about this, like, absolutely. Like, but I'm not going to be in your DMs being like, girl, what happened? Like, I'm not gonna be that nosy fucking queer who's trying to just entertain myself for a conversation that's taking emotional damage on the person. That's not fair. And I think anyone out there listening,
because we should lift each other up. We should really lift each other up. And I think that I know that you are not gonna love everybody in your community, and I do think that we should lift each other up. And I appreciate what you said right there, because the thing is, how am I supposed to battle on a public front or even a private front when I don't even have my head right? Like, how am I supposed to be able to? And the other thing too is, I feel like it's a disservice to people that you are having positive and or negative interactions with when you don't have the ability to communicate in the way that you want to, because you are not well. Like, you're going through something and you're trying to get yourself. And so not engaging is also a tactic, because the person's not going to get what they want from you regardless. Why would you engage with it and just potentially have more things pour onto your plate when you already didn't even have spoons for the stuff that was already there?
Yeah. Like, it's, I think a thing I stopped doing recently is when I have like a really like passionate concept that I want to discuss, I've stopped posting about it, because at that point I'm already like really low on spoons because I put my energy into being upset over it. And so then when people are engaging in that, that adds more and more overwhelming aspects, which sucks because I really do like talking about serious things. I have to limit myself with that, or I get the unalivey feelings, because there's so many things happening that are negative, but there's also so many positive things that I feel like aren't being highlighted enough.
I shared a picture on my Facebook about an audience member who had said some really nice and positive things for me, and I asked them if I could share it, and of course they said yes. And like the reaction to that and the likes and the even the shares with that was really positive with me, because it is the definition of like, let's spotlight something a little bit more positive. I know that the drama is yummy and it's delicious for people, and they love to comment and whatever, and I get that, but I'd rather comment on somebody like, I'd rather comment on a thotty photo, or I'd rather comment on somebody like going out for a pageant, or I'd rather comment on somebody's new concept for a look, or I'd rather comment on how somebody had a successful sold out show. You know, like, let's comment on some of these positive things and the silly, stupid stuff. Let's comment on those things. When we get like 50 comments on something that's negative as hell, it's like, that doesn't do anything. It doesn't do anything at all.
Except cause more harm. Some friends are going to have like genuine, like, supportive messages, but most of those comments are there just for the drama, and it sucks because it makes you feel just more isolated drama. When you're making a post to feel like you're not alone, and then people are just like, oh my god, that's terrible, or they're like, oh my gosh, girl, she would like, and it's like, you know, being like, recognizing that someone's going through pain is very, I think that's a very kind thing to do, especially if you want to be supportive. But like, getting on there and being like, trying to make it about you, or trying to just add to the negativeness, like, it just, it's draining. It's draining to read. It's draining to experience. I've noticed a lot, like, whenever I have, like, I sometimes will just do like discussion posts. I haven't for a while, but I'll just be like, oh, like, what's your favorite, like, queer movie or something, like, what's your favorite way to go about this kind of thing? And the ones that are geared towards negativity are the ones that get any traction, which sucks.
Yeah, I actually posted, I did my first one that I don't really ever do stuff like this, and I didn't even have a picture to go along with it, and I just said, what Sailor Scout do I most remind you of? And I had like 15 people who commented, and I never thought I would get even that many comments on something that wasn't related to something about love or drama in some capacity. Mm-hmm. And so like, that was super nice to be able to, you know, have those feelings. And I was doing it because I just wanted to say something that's out there, and, you know, and
what was the correct answer?
I didn't actually know what the correct answer was going to be.
Really? I mean, I definitely get, like, Usagi vibes from you, like, not to be, like, crazy or anything, but she's a Cancer, you cry a lot, and you're in charge of everything.
You know, the funny thing is, I think that I do identify with her the most, and nobody said her for me, and it was really eye-opening because I do put myself out there in a specific way. Mm-hmm. Even saying on this podcast will probably give my enemies a little smile, saying that they know that I'm dealing with things. But the thing is, it's true. I identify with her the most. She's a Cancer. She cares about her family and her friends the most. Those are the things that are the most important to her. And her courage comes from trying to do the right thing and do right by her friends.
A
lot of people said like Jupiter or Pluto, and stuff like that. Like people who are just like really strong. Pluto. Yeah. But yeah, that's, so they lost a lot of those.
Like, I could see Sailor Jupiter. Anyone that says Sailor Mercury is fucking lying. That, you know, if someone's a Sailor Mercury stan, you can just tell. You can look at them and you're like, that makes sense. Me, I think Jupiter and Mars were like my favorites. Oh, and Venus. I like Venus too, but you know, someone's probably gonna be like, yeah, no, you're like chibi Uso, like very irrelevant.
Nope. Damn. Jesus. Wow. Yeah.
I know, I'm really mean to myself sometimes. I know I'm not irrelevant, but you know, my mouth was moving fast. That was the inner saboteur that was slipping out. Fun stuff.
Yeah. It's true. Dragon, so dragon as we get to...
Oh, yes.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, drag takes a toll on your mental health. Like, you literally have to, like, be on top of it, or you're going to, like burning all the bridges that you can, because I've seen it happen before when people have had breaks, and that's what's happened. I've had actually really good conversations after things have calmed down, because I was able to recognize that things were, like, a mental, like, breakdown versus, like, someone just, you know, trying to be mean. And I think you know what I'm talking about, but you know, it's really hard to balance everything with everything happening so fast around us.
I think for me, I have I'm in the biggest mode of harm prevention for myself right now. And a lot of people who, if they do have a breakdown and then they like come for me and then they later apologize about it, I don't have the ability to compassionately be like, oh yeah, it's totally fine. Like, I don't have that in me right now. And then I also don't have the thing to be outwardly kind of anything for anyone at this moment. What happens with me when I get really depressed is as narcissistic as this is about to sound, I go very inward. Like, everything about my survival comes from self-preservation, like, to where I only care about what I need to do to be able to be okay. And so when somebody's like, hey girl, like I need your help on this. And I'm like, I have nothing to offer you because I don't have anything. I know we talk about this in the spoon conversation, but it's really aggressive. I also become really selfish. Like where somebody's like I'll go buy myself food and not even consider that there's other people that might want to join me to get food. It'll be when like I'll like get in line or I'll leave the room early or I won't say goodbye or I won't say hello or I won't give the gay goodbye or the gay hug or whatever. I'll go to the place I want to go. I'll do the things I want to do. I become aggressively selfish as a way of self-preservation because I just need to feed into myself.
I don't think you're being selfish at all. And this is what I'm going to, I'm going to tell you why I don't think you're being selfish, because you are such a giving person that you put these high expectations of yourself to always take care of other people. And sometimes it's just okay to take care of yourself. And if that means getting food alone, going home early, not saying bye to everyone, that's not ethically mean. You don't have to say bye to anyone. You don't owe anybody that. You giving people that is a gift from you because you're expending your energy and your spoons to do that. So it's okay not to do that all the time. I would say you're not being selfish for that. I think selfish would be like bringing friends out for food and then ordering yourself every fucking appetizer and telling them that they can only get the value meal. That would be selfish for me. But you going by yourself, you're being respectful. You're not like being like, oh, look at all this food I'm getting. Like, nom, nom, nom. Like, no, I think you're being a very regular person with that.
Thank you. Yeah, I really appreciate that. Oh, God. Life's hard.
It really is.
It's so hard.
Like, I'm just as hard on myself about stuff. Like, God, like, my partner wasn't in a great mood, and I was just like, this is obviously all me. I did this. And I'm, like, taking all the responsibility when it's just my partner doesn't like grocery shopping, and we were there for 2 hours. Like, which is a very valid reason to be annoyed and irritated. But, you know, with my past, yeah, like, I'm used to not having a partner who communicates, because my ex It was like playing Clue, trying to like figure out what the fuck was going on. And my partner now was just like, yeah, you kind of really pissed me off. And then like, and it'll be right when it happens. I don't have to like wait for months and months and be like, remember that day 28 days ago? I've been upset about it since then. Like, and that's where my anxiety is coming from. Having a poor communication with my, with a long-term partner. So it's, I don't know, it's so easy to like villainize yourself when in your mental health of being like, wow, I'm such a terrible person. Cause like, you know, in the end you probably aren't. Like even people that fuck up and do major things, like you're not a bad person.
Yeah, I hear that. I hear that. I fully hear that. I think that gave me some things to think about, actually. I've been taking, I mean, most people are direct communicators with me, like very direct communicators with me. But I have been having some things recently where I have an indirect communicator who is struggling. And like when we communicate. And so I've been trying to navigate that. And so that I think that was some really good advice. For me, because I'm a person who's just like you in this regard, to where I say, hey, what's the problem? And an indirect communicator isn't going to tell you right away. And they might not tell you for a couple of days. And they will show it to you how they're feeling, but they're not going to necessarily give you like a clear, concise. I can give a dissertation in any given moment about how I feel in an exact moment about whatever with scholarly sources. And, you know, some people can't do that.
Some people are like a delayed package, like it might show. It's like when you order something from an outside buyer on Amazon, it's just like, yeah, it should be around like, you know, Tuesday, April 25th to, you know, October 1st. And you're like, okay. And it won't tell you when it's going to be shipped. You're just waiting in anxious anticipation. Yeah. My boyfriend will be like, you're doing it again, because I grew up with very passive aggressive being like the main form of communication, and I'm very good at it, and it's not a great habit usually. It helps with some professional text messages, which I love, but that's pretty much all I should be using it for. Or emails. Me and Hillary have that in common.
That's funny.
I'll show you my emails. Oh,
that's good. I love that. So at this point in the podcast, because we're kind of wrapping up, can you tell the kids your social medias?
Oh, yeah. It's pretty much just Facebook and Instagram. So you can find me on Facebook, Craven Horrors. And then Instagram is just Craven_Horrors, and Craven_Horrors is also my Cash App and Venmo plug. But yeah, that is where I am. I've been not great about responding to messages, but I'm a better video caller, actually. That gives me less anxiety for some reason, just because I like can see the face and I'm not like, I don't know. I like it better because I can get, you can talk it out in like 2 minutes of what you were trying to communicate. That might take like fucking 20 minutes. I'm all about getting it done faster. No,
that makes sense. So what positive note do you want to leave the kids with when it comes to these conversations about mental health?
So mental health is, it's incredibly hard to manage, but as soon as you're like addressing it and learning about it, you're going to learn more about yourself. You're going to be able to improve your quality of life. You're going to be able to put those boundaries up that you were thought you never could. With as much pain as your mental health can cause you, it can cause a lot of joy. Because like, I don't know if we talked about this on the last time we talked, because I really don't even remember, but me and Coco like almost immediately had a falling out when we first started being friends, because our communication styles were so different, and I had an idea of what friends were like, and it wasn't the best interpretation of what that would be, but we were able to communicate it out, and we've learned that we're a lot more similar than that.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I'm glad we went through that.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it wasn't like, I don't know. I don't think it was like, I think it was an important thing to go through to kind of like understand like who we were. And like, I think I learned that you were a lot more sensitive of a person than I had an impression of, because your Coco persona mm-hmm. is much different than your out of drag persona and your everyday persona. And that's not a read or anything.
There are three different sides.
Yeah.
There are three different sides. Definitely, for sure. Definitely for sure.
But
But I want to leave the kids with this too. Recognize that, you know, there's nothing wrong with seeking out help. There's nothing wrong with self-care, even though I don't necessarily do it for myself. There's nothing wrong with feeling those negative emotions and recognizing that you might not see a way out just quite yet, but I can promise you that there always is a way out in a positive, healthy, healing way. You know, and at agemofasecretpodcast.com, you know, I'll put the National Suicide Hotline because this is really important subjects as well. You know, so if you feel like you need somebody to talk to, go ahead.
Drinking is going to make it worse. I think when you're younger, you think, oh, well, you know, drinking will numb it, but it's going to enhance your negative emotions. It enhances your positive ones, but if you're going through a bad time, you're going to want to avoid that. It doesn't hurt to talk to a friend. Like, and sometimes I'll message 5 people at once if I really need to discuss something that's like time sensitive. I will message 5 people at once. And then when I get someone who can talk with me, I talk with them, and then I just inform everyone else that that was what I was doing, because it's better to reach out than try to deal with it yourself, because you might put yourself in a position where you're very unsafe. So people care about you a lot more than you think.
People care about you. Maybe that's the title of this episode. People care about you a lot more than you think.
I like that.
Yeah, I think
they like do, though. Like, because
thanks for listening, listeners. Oh, no. Go ahead. No, finish it. Finish your line. Finish your line.
I forgot what I was going to say. I'm a Leo. I just like talking.
I bet it was something really savvy and important. Well, say bye to the kids, Craven.
Bye, kids. Be safe. Do drugs in a safe environment.
Hi, everybody. This has been another episode of A Gem of a Secret Podcast. The host of A Gem of a Secret Podcast is Coco Gem Holiday. Our music was provided by Touche Douche and Party Favors. You can follow them on Instagram at Touche Likes Beef and Party Favors Music. Please follow us online at www.agemofasecretpodcast.com. That is a J-E-M of a secret podcast.com or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Our episodes are released every Thursday. Bye-bye.